My name is Mildred and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Thank you. I hail from Toronto. My home group is the Rocks Glen Traditional Group. We meet Mondays and Thursdays. Please come and visit us if you are in Toronto. My dry date is May the 18th, 1973. I had a sponsor for 44 years, and I have a sponsor again. Having a sponsor at this point is very different, but it's very necessary. I don't believe that age in sobriety changes the rules of the game and how you practice it. And so with that, I'm very happy to be here with you. I feel like I don't think I've ever felt before in front of a group. I feel very open. I feel very willing to tell you things. And what I think I really have experienced here is the openness of you with each other and with yourselves. What if we could take that into the world? It really concerns me, as it should all of us, not in a nasty way, but we're in a very bad place with a lot of hatred and a lot of goings on. You know, and there are scientists who say we may be in for a sixth mass extinction. And the thing is, if we do it, it'll be because of our behavior. And I always tell people, every one of us matters. Don't ever get it into your head that somebody up here is more important than you, or that a politician is more important than you, or somebody who has more money. You are important. I am important. And the energy that I carry is very important. And if it's the energy, you know, and I think it's worthwhile, just because the energy is so high in here tonight. It's so strong. Let's send that out to the world. Let's consciously do that, each one of us in our own way, and make a difference for somebody and perhaps for our world. Well, I am here, as you know, celebrating 50 years of sobriety. And I can tell you, it has been some ride. The last 2 weeks, like I'm going home tomorrow, and it'll be kind of a relief. Not because I haven't enjoyed the adulation and the thanks and all of that. I'm not stupid. But you know, like I said to a group of people, we had a big party on Saturday night. And I said to them, you know, do I feel excited? And I said, no, it's too big. I can feel excited if you give me a little present, or if you phone me and say I love you or something like that. I can feel excited. But I'm not big enough to be excited about this, because this is a God thing. 50 years of sobriety is not a Mildred thing. It's a God thing. And, you know, as I said to everybody that has offered their thanks and appreciation, it's a celebration for every one of you, just as it is a celebration for me. And above all, it is a celebration of God, because none of this is possible without God, without you, and without me. So that's the way I feel about this. And several people have said to me, you know, what is it like to be sober 50 years? Well, I think the best way I can describe that to you is to tell you how 50 years is possible. I was born in Saskatchewan to a family of 10. I was the baby of the family. And how do you get to the place where you are taken down in life and then brought up again? I'll tell you. It starts in childhood. And if anybody tells you it's not important, I'm telling you, don't listen, because it has been important. You know, Bill says it in step 8. I'm not talking heresy. In step 8 in the 12 and 12, he says we've got stuff buried below the level of consciousness. And you know, I almost went to the grave because I didn't know that. I almost took my life because I couldn't figure out how to fix what was going on, because I would always go back to that. Anyway, I'm 3 years old and life is good. And I look at the sky and I see the aurora borealis and I love the whole thing and the stars in the sky, and we were Roman Catholic and we went to church and this was God to me. And so I made a discovery. I'm a happy little kid, I think. And then I made a discovery. The person I loved so much in the world, even then my heart went to her. I had a retarded sister. They called her retarded in those days. Today they wouldn't. But then they did. They kept her in grade 3 till she was 16, and she cried a lot, and I cried with her, and I wanted it fixed. And that's where I learned. I don't like the world. I don't like the way the world is. Some parts of it seem nice, but there's an ugliness, and it's got to be changed. And I went to my family. They gave me apples if I asked for apples. Easy. And I asked them to fix Dora. I was 3. I was 4. I was 5. I didn't understand. And you know what? They didn't either, because this is a lot of years ago, before some of the teachings of Freud and Jung and all of that came in. And if you think that's not appropriate in a meeting of this sort, read Thomas Keating. And Thomas Keating talks about the stuff we take on as children. He wasn't afraid. You know, I don't think this isn't strictly AA. It is strictly spiritual growth. And so he says in there that the stuff that we have buried as children, we won't get rid of without deep meditation and so on. I didn't know that. My family didn't know that. They weren't bad people. You know, if we think about it, there's a lot wrong today. I realize that. But you know what? There's a lot of good also. I don't want to go back to sending smoke signals to reach you. I don't want to have to get on a horse to go home tomorrow. Do you, Lori? By the way, I brought one of my sponsees. Do you want to stand up and say hello? Lori. So, there's a lot right about the way things are. And one of the things that is right about this, I think, you don't have to say, well, you know, if I study some psychology and I find out about things, then, you know, that's going to interfere with my spirituality. It has not interfered with my spirituality. My spirituality has grown because, you know, it's like anything else. Do you want to have a blender that you don't know how to use? I've got technology, and I know what that is. It's useless to me, some of it, because I don't know how to use it. And I think there's stuff in our lives that I didn't know how to use. I had to get sober and be suicidal at 21 years before I could really get it. Anyway, back to being 5. And I remember standing by myself and my dog out on the farm. My father was a rich farmer. We had lots of land. We had big machinery. I had 4 big brothers and 5 sisters, and I was the baby of the family. They all had to work. They all had a different life than I. And you know what I learned? At that age, I don't fit. What do I know that is of use to that whole procedure? But I'm smart. So I get to go to school. And there comes the whole idea of separation. I was also taught about a God up in the sky, that God lives in this somewhere, And the picture in the old Butler Catechism, he sat on this throne. I won't get into that. But everything that I knew, I didn't have answers because I asked God to fix Dora. And I expected that if you can make sunsets and you can make the stars and the moon and all of that, you can fix Dora. I didn't understand the process, and nothing happened. And God became to me a useless twit. And you know, at 50 years of sobriety, I'm happy to say to you, God is no longer a useless twit. It is my thinking and my spirit that has had to change. And when I look at my life today, I see a perfection in everything that happened. You know, sometimes I think we look at the hard things that happen and we think, you know, if that hadn't happened, you know what? If that hadn't all happened, I wouldn't be the person I am today. And I value the person I am today. And so I didn't know what to do. And one day I took a drink. I didn't take the drink because I thought, you know, something magical is going to happen, but it did. My father had his friends in, and little Mildred poured the booze. And I poured some into myself. And I swear to you that all this time later, I remember what that felt like. The world changed like that. Dr. Silkworth knew, in the doctor's opinion, he says, we get the sense of ease and comfort. Oh my God, I got the sense of ease and comfort. I could handle Dora crying, I could handle the family, I could handle everything. And that's the way booze was with me for 35 years. See, I don't think alcohol is really the problem with us. You know, sometimes, sure, we have to take a look at the drinking, and I'm not saying it isn't a problem. But why does it become such a crucifixion? I mean, listen to the stories of what people have done. Look at me. I've got every opportunity. I get the opportunity to go to school. And I drive my life into the ground where I'm finished. I'm on a park bench. I remember being, I don't fit. Like everybody else has got something important to do to make the family function. You know, I think it's, I'm so grateful. I don't dwell on this, but I'm glad I know it. And one of my nieces was here, and she said, we know that. You were the baby of the family, and you had a different life completely. My brothers and sisters didn't get the fabulous education. They didn't get to run 300 voice choirs. They didn't get to direct operettas and all the things that I did. They got to make money and buy land, and that's the thing. And that's what I saw, and that's what I thought I wanted. That's where I wanted to fit, and I didn't. You know what? I'm 90 years old. I just celebrated 90. Aren't I a good-looking 90? And it's taken me 88 years. Taken God 88 years, however you want to put it, to find some real peace inside. I'm talking about real peace, where I can say I'm happy to be in my skin, and I'm happy tomorrow to go home, and I live alone, and I don't have children, and I don't have grandchildren, and I don't have to dread it and try and figure out how can I go home tomorrow and be happy. It's taken time. It takes time. And if you're struggling with old ideas and you're struggling with things, I'll tell you this. Stopping drinking means that you've stopped drinking. That's all. And now the real work begins. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. It isn't about running to meetings, and it isn't about I'm going to read the book and I'm going to do this and then I'm going to be okay. All of that is all about enabling us to live sober with the same crap that we had and not have to take a drink and find a way to go through that. That's what my life has been. And so I got to go through, I got a great education. I went to a finishing school. Everybody was proud of me. And but I'm drinking. Once I had that drink at 5, I would cheat. I learned to lie. I learned to steal. And I didn't care. And I ran around. I graduated high school at 14. Couldn't get into university. And so I hung around with a group of guys. We drank, we sang, we partied for about 3 years, and then somebody spoiled it. One of the girls said she was going to the convent. They all made a fuss over her. The fuss was off me, and I didn't like it, so 3 weeks later, I announced I'm going to a convent. Honest to God, that was my motivation. I want the attention. And I got caught because they said, you can't go. And nobody would take me. They all said, you're too wild. And now I knew where the exciting convents were, had to be in the States. So I wrote all kinds of convents in the States, and finally somebody said, we've got a house near Hamilton, you can join there. And they took me sight unseen, and they didn't smell me, which was a big mistake. I was drunk the night I entered. I stayed drunk the time I was there, and it was a good time, and it was, you know, it wasn't a wasted time, because after 15 years, Mother Superior said, you know, you don't belong here. And that wasn't because I was a bad sister. That was because she understood the soul, and she knew this wasn't where my soul should be. And so we got my dispensation, and I left. Now, I'm a well-educated woman, and I think it's all okay. I mean, you take the habit off me, and you take the vows. You know, I was dispensed, and I had my secular name back, and I thought, I'm good to go. Was I ever? 2 days later, I'm in the bar. I meet the men. I had never seen bars like this. When I left Saskatchewan, we had stinky beer parlors. And now this had red carpets and music and lots of men in business suits. They loved me and I loved them. And it was hell from then on. And 3 weeks later, I was put in jail. And there were a list of charges against me. Like, you get me drinking, I will do whatever. I don't care. No morals, no legalities, nothing. And I made such a fuss, they brought the chief of police down. And he took a look at me, and he yelled at me. I still remember him standing over me, and he's saying, what's wrong with you? He said, I have been a chief of police many years, and he said, I've never seen an ex-nun in jail. Yeah, that really happened. And he said, and I better never see you here again. And I remember after he left, I remember the day I took vows. How does this happen? I'm disgusting to the chief of police. I remember the day I took vows, dressed in white. And the way that went, you walked down the aisle, the organ was playing, they were singing, Magnificat anima mea dominum. My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. And my soul was happy, like it is tonight. And I prostrated on the floor in front of the altar and offered my life to God, and I thought it was over. I've done it now. This is good. Given my life to God, and I'm good to go. And 3 days later, I was drunk. How does that happen? So I won't. Let's get on with it. So that's 7 years after I left the convent. I was hospitalized 32 times in psych wards. I've had 38 electroshock treatments. I've had hours of therapy and nothing could stop me. Get out, go drink. Get out, go drink. Shock treatment, drink. Shock, you know, and on it went. And in that time, I met Dr. Hoffer. And I'm not going to talk more about the drinking because it's really a dirty, nasty story. And he said to my doctor, Dr. Hoffer was a friend of Bill Wilson, and he said, you know, this girl, she hasn't got all this psychiatric stuff. He said, she's alcoholic. She should go to AA. And when my doctor said yes, I was delighted because my brother had gotten sober. He died 49 years sober, by the way. But he walked the way ahead of me. But my dad said, AA is so good. They didn't know I had a problem. He just told it to me because it was my brother. And he said, you love your brother. But what I heard was AA. And when Dr. McCarricker said, you should go to AA, I said, sure. And I went to AA. Educated as I was, I knew nothing. God, you can be so so-called smart and so stupid. And I went and sat in the third row. First row, third seat over. For 5.5 years, stoned. I was without alcohol. I'm telling you, I know what life is like without a program, without change. That's what I should say. Without the God change that this program is about. I don't think this program is about just not drinking. It is about the transformation that takes place when we do the steps, when we do the work and we keep on doing the work. And that's when you can take the heart of joy that you have tonight and take it out there into a world that doesn't have that, and you can keep that heart of joy. That's transformation. See? In that 5.5 years, I met some of the heroes of AA. We walk on the shoulders of people like Chuck Chamberlain, Cease Corrigo, Clancy. I could name a lot of names who were sober. Today, Johnny Harris is still alive, one of my great heroes. People like that, they didn't spend their lives running to meetings. And don't get me wrong, I don't have a problem. You do what you can do so you can maintain the program that you have. And one day you will hear what you need to hear. So the inner change can take place. But they walked the program. They lived the program. And they helped people. And it wasn't about, we're going to discuss your psychological stuff. They helped me to see what the program was really about. Anyway, I just got sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker, and I married my psychiatrist. That should tell you something. And he, too, was alcoholic. And, you know, we had the high life. It isn't about that you can't get the high life. You can get the money, and you can get the big house, and you can get... He was director of a hospital, and the day came where we separated. My marriage was only about 6 months in length. I'm not long in... I don't last very long. We lost everything, and I wound up on a park bench. So, if you go back before the 18th of September... And you think 50 years ago, I was on a park bench living like a tramp. The morning of May the 18th, absolutely clueless. The morning of the 18th of May, 1973, the police picked me off the park bench and took me to a psych ward. And the morning, for 2 days, I really couldn't walk. I used to get paralysis. And the morning of Sunday... The nurse came in and she said, what should have been good news, she said, we're going to discharge you today. And that was the end. I went to my room and I did an assessment. I did didn't do an inventory. I assessed. I'm going to be discharged. I have no home. I don't have one friend in the world. You know, and if you think you're going to keep friends, you don't. People get fed up with you. And they said, stay away from us. You come near us, we're going to have the police. We're going to call the police. I had no money, and I had no idea what to do. I couldn't think of a thing that I could do if I went out on the street except stand there stupid. And I made a decision. You all seem to know how to live. I don't. I'm out of here. I'm going to take my life. And I just thought, I can't do this anymore. The big book, they knew this. Bill wrote, he said, we have to concede to our innermost self. I was always ready to concede to you because you were easier on me. I conceded that morning that I do not know how to live. I want to talk a little bit about that because I think that's one of the most important things I've ever done. And I didn't concede to God. I didn't believe in God. So I'm not going to concede to God. And God hasn't helped me, didn't help me with Dora. Screw you. I'm done with you, baby. And I thought, well, I'm just going to end it. And I asked the nurse to get my coat. That's a sacred moment. When you can say to the powers in the universe, I don't know how to do this thing. I've tried everything I know. I don't know how, so I'm out of here. And I had a spiritual experience. And I'll tell you exactly how it happened. I was standing there by the window looking out. And the next minute, I didn't hear anything. I didn't see anything. And the next minute, I said, I'm clean inside. I don't have to drink anymore. And you know something? Those were the truest words I've ever said. I was a nut house. And in 50 years, I have never had the compulsion. It's been rough some years. A lot of change has had to take place. And I've never had the compulsion or the obsession. And I remember saying, like, and that's not because of me, but my surrender was complete. I don't know how to do this. And when I saw I was clean, I didn't know that was God. I didn't know what had happened. I just said, I don't know how to live sober. You'll have to send me somebody. And there was a rap on the door and a man stood there and he said, I came to offer you help. And I'm going to get over through this. He took me the next day to what was then a hospital treatment center. There were no treatment centers in 1973. And I'll just not say another word about that. I left the treatment center after 28 days, and they gave me enough money for Skid Row. And I got a room on Skid Row, and I did not know how to live on Skid Row. I had one sheet, one blanket, one pillow, one whatever. And I lived that way for a year. And I have to tell you, this is weird. That was one of the best years, easiest years of my life. I had no hope. I wasn't sitting there thinking, well, if I do this, then I'll get that. I got a job sweeping a factory floor. And that's what I did every day. I had no radio, none of that stuff. I'd go home, and I don't know how I did. I walked a lot, I guess. And I was hungry a lot of the time. You know what? It hasn't hurt me. And about 6 months into that, God, this power has never left me without what I've needed. The psychiatrist at the hospital, I know now, he took a liking to me. And he was a Hindu. And he used to say, come once a week, why would anybody want to sit with me for an hour? I had nothing interesting to say. And all I remember him saying was, don't drink, Mildred. Don't drink. And don't drug. And you'll be fine. And I was. 6 months in, I was introduced to AA. I won't get into that. My first sponsor got drunk. Two men stepped forward, you know, and all men aren't dirtbags. I want you to know I think that. Not of you. I love you, you know that. Two men stepped forward and they said, "You're too sick to stay here if you don't do the steps." And they came early. I'm telling you, it's one of the gifts. Somebody held me accountable. They said, "If you miss, we're done. You get here an hour and a half before the meeting. We'll read the book to you. We'll tell you what to do. And if you do what we ask, we'll stick with you." And they did. And then I found another sponsor. This was a man, and, you know, he saved my life. He was my sponsor for 44 years. And he taught me something. You know what? I've sponsored a lot of people, and I think they suffer from what I suffered from. They didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how the relationships went. But most of all, I didn't know that God was within me. I didn't know who God was, and I didn't know that God was within you. So it's all just people. And I'll tell you, if that's all you have, you're going to have fight. You're going to have war, because it doesn't work that way. You know, the ancients have said, one of the most important things we need to know is, who am I? Who am I? And the interesting thing is, the scientists now are asking that question. Who are we? Because they're finding that even though they are making rules and they are measuring things and all that kind of stuff, it's beyond that. So anyway, 1 year sober, they gave me my 1 year medallion and I got a job. And my friend Ken in San Diego, he talks about God shots. I want to get on with this because I want to talk about this recovery and how this has gone. And I got a teaching job. I'm an educator. And here I was. This was my learning about being with real people. 200 adult teachers and professors and me and 2,000 students, you know, 18, 19 years old. Did they care for my feelings? Hell no. And if they didn't do what I asked, I yelled. This is where I'll tell you just one thing my sponsor taught me. I cried one day. I called him and I said, I'm going to get fired. They don't like me and all this. And I explained to him what had happened. And he said, "That's not the right way to go." He said, "Tomorrow morning, you are going to have a chat with those students." Can you imagine this? Me and 20 or 30 students apologizing for yelling at them. When they were the fault, said I, they're the ones who didn't do what I asked. He said, "I don't care." I said, "I can't do it." And he said, "Then get another sponsor." He said, "I'm not fooling around with you. You can get well, but you've got to take the high road and the hard road." And I just couldn't sleep that night, and I was shaking that morning. And I said, "You know," said, I have misbehaved way more than you. I said, "This yelling at you," and explained. They started to cry, and I became, that was a big start of the healing. 7 years sober, I bought my first house. I'm not going to go into all that, but I bought many houses. The real estate in Toronto was at a time when you could do this, buy houses and flip them and make piles of money, and I became very rich. So we're talking about my first 21 years of sobriety. You know, you may think, well, didn't you pray? No. Why not? I had no relationship with God. All that I knew was the God up there in the sky. And the years that I spent in the convent, the ideas about spirituality and God were still pretty limited. You know who I think has made a big difference was William James. William James, that great philosopher, this is what he said. He said, when you think about God, don't think about your concepts. Because he said, if you put ideas, God's a father, God's this, God's that, God, and you compare. He said, it's not true anyway, because nobody's ever seen God. Go to your experience. If I don't leave anything else here, I'm going to leave that. Go to your experience. And I talked to my sponsor, and he said, go to your experience of May the 20th. He said, what had you done to earn, if you think of, in terms of that, to earn the grace to be free of your compulsion and obsession? How does God treat us? Just think tonight. Just think about this. There are murders being committed. There are children being beaten. Whether you like it or not, that's happening, you can be sure. And yet, is God refusing anybody oxygen? Is God saying, I've had it with you? Did God say to me, you know, you're a jerk. You had 15 years in a convent to fix yourself up, and look at you, screw you. Didn't happen. Instead, love was poured out. You know, a couple of weeks ago, months, one of my sponsees invited me over, and his son lives with him, and his son had bought a new dog. And the dog, the day that I was there, it felt to me, was about this size, and he was just white fur. Just white, pure white, and just sweet. And I put him on my knee, and I changed. I felt love. I'm 90 years old, and that is the first time I have ever felt love. I remember looking at that little dog. And I thought, I knew something was happening to me. God uses all kinds of things. I was changed that day. I could think love, but I didn't feel love. And I remember that little dog there, and I thought, you know, if anybody came near you to hurt you, I'd kill them. That's how strong the feeling was for that little animal. And I thought, think about that. And my sponsee after a while, he said, you know, Mildred, he said, your face changed when you had that little guy on your lap. You looked like a different person. You know something? I'll interrupt this because I'm on this subject. I have had a very closed heart. My heart isn't closed now. I can look at you and I can say, and I'm not lying, I love every one of you. Because that piece we read, deep within, every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It is only there that he may be found. It doesn't, as my sponsor said, you don't have to like everybody. But you have to honor the God within them. And then he showed me that story of Einstein writing to Gandhi, because Gandhi used to say, namaste, namaste. And Einstein said, what are you talking about? And he wrote back and said, it means the God in me salutes the God in you. And you know, it's true. We're not all on the same page. We don't all think alike. We don't all know alike. Well, I had an experience this morning. I was meditating, and it was as if God spoke to me, and God said, you know, Mildred, this world is my library. And every person is a book. And in every book, that's our life. And some books are written about nasty stuff. And some books are written about nice stuff. And some people have chapters like you do. You've got some nasty chapters. But you've also got some good chapters. And it's up to me. I just think it just makes it so much easier to care, to be nice to people. You know, Alan Watts used to say, call God what is. We're all where we are. But you know what happens to me? My false self gets up. You shouldn't be the way you are. I don't like that. Why don't you, you know, that stuff? What does our big book say? It says, we have to be rid of the false self, or it kills us. I didn't make that up. It's in the book. It says, I've got to be rid of the false self. And you know, for 88 years, I tried to do it on my steam. Now I do it on God's steam. You know, I don't care where you're at. You're where you're at, and I love you where you are. I may not like you, and maybe if I have to do business, it's true. You don't like everybody. If you do, you're on something. That's, I am. Hell, there were some real scumbags I used to remember if I were drinking and they'd say, come to bed with me. Sure, that's fine. No discrimination there. So I want to say one more thing about this love thing while I'm at it. It's at the bottom of living in the now, isn't it? My mother and I, we're talking about me getting 50 years. This is a big piece of it. My mother and I had a terrible relationship. Was my mother a bad woman? Uh-uh. The community loved her. Everybody loved her. There were 10 of us in the family. 9 of us loved her. Why do you find that humorous? I did not. Have you ever had a person in your life you don't really understand, but you cannot get near them? You hate them. You don't like them. How many? See, we've all got some. And mine happened to be my mother. Don't touch me. Leave me alone. And one time she said to me, Mildred, you're ashamed of me. I wasn't ashamed of her. There was an energy between us. It didn't work. And she said, you know, she said, you're ashamed of me. And I said, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. She knew and I knew. But it's not something you could talk about. How does God resolve that? I'll tell you how God resolved it. Never in my day, 2 days before she died, my husband and I went to see her. She was in hospital. And I had never willingly touched my mother. She was lying there in bed, and I went right to her bed and put my arms around her. And she moved and put her arms around me, and we bawled. We didn't say a word. We bawled for at least 20 minutes. I'm not saying we cried. We bawled. You think about all the years of that energy between us. And we bawled. And finally, my husband said, we've got to get going. We've got to get back. And I said, I can't. And finally, we said goodbye, got in the hall, and I couldn't go. I went back again. And we did it for another 20 minutes. And you know what I realized? as time went on. That was my mother's amend to me, and that was my mother's amend to her. And, you know, I'm saying that because I think sometimes when we have difficult things, I think we have past lives. I don't know, you don't have to believe it because I say it. I just feel that way. I've met a person a couple of times, but that was the worst of them. And my growth went forward immensely after that experience. At the time, I didn't realize what had happened. But as the days have gone by, I realize we made our amends. And I think sometimes God allows us to do that because there are no words. I mean, what could my mother and I have said to each other? What could I have said to her? I thought about that. I wouldn't have had the words to say, I'm sorry for being a jerk and never touching you and feeling bad. We did it with our tears. If there's anybody you have to do that with, and it happens, be grateful. Anyway, Father O'Brien has played a big role in my life. First of all, at 21 years, I was going to commit suicide. I had money. I had built a big house. I had beautiful cars. I had beautiful clothes. I had men in my life. And I was dying inside. Sitting in the meeting, and people would say, I just loved AA. And we have that motto on the wall. You are no longer alone. I am no longer alone. And I'd want to say, shut up! You know, because I felt more alone. Because being alone, being together isn't about being with somebody physically. The intimacy is here. I've said this often to people who have a sexual relationship, and they're trying to squeeze intimacy out of how many times they sleep together. Intimacy isn't a question of that. It's a question of what's in here. And how open can I be with you? And how open will you allow yourself? I still find that I have to be careful when I've got a new friend, not a lover, just a friend. And I find now that he really shows he likes me, I want to back away. Watch yourself. That's what intimacy to me is really about. When you can be yourself and not back away because somebody else is willing to show themselves. Anyway, Father O'Brien played a big role in my life because he was the one who started me giving retreats. And that's been like a second career, not a career, you know what I mean. I've done a lot of retreats and I've done a lot of conferences and things. And I haven't done much about hobbies. I'll tell you something. If I had to do my life again, I would take the time to do hobbies. You know, I didn't. And so do I have, yeah, I read and I do this, but I don't play golf. Never learned to play golf because it got in the way of drinking. Never learned to play tennis because it got in the way of drinking. And then when I got sober, I was poor. I had no money. I had to work. I didn't have time to go to clubs and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, what matters as you go along is the quality of your life. And that comes from the spiritual work. So let's get to that. I've been talking about that. At 21 years sober, I was suicidal. And that's when God put a person, he put some information, he put a book, he put a name and a phone number in my hand, and I went to the States to find out. And you know what I found out? I found out all that stuff about the subconscious and how our personalities are formed by the time we're seven. and I knew I was hearing the truth. That's where we get that stuff. I've got 4 old beliefs. We've all got them. I know you have them because it's part of what science shows us. Nobody loves me. I'm always alone. I'm not important, and nothing good ever happens to me. Now, go through life with that. I didn't know I had those, but that's the way the world felt. Does anybody identify with those ideas? You know, and the problem with them is this. When you've got them, you're going to do something about them. Me? Nobody loves me, nobody. I knew what I did. I went about trying to get the world to make me okay. And try to get men to make me okay. And if you just did what I want, and if you gave me what I needed, then I'd be okay. And that almost ended my life. And that teacher taught me. And then I found it in step 8 in the 12 and 12, that Bill Wilson had that. He had that idea, I have to be number one or I'm nobody. Oh, yes. It's written about. I've seen it. And he says, we've got stuff buried below the level of consciousness. At the time of these occurrences, they have given our emotions violent twists, which have since discolored our personalities and altered our lives for the worse. And there is stuff to do with that. I'll tell you something else I've learned. And this has been big, and I've talked to Lori about this. I didn't know this, but I never could figure out, because I felt as the time went on, and I was 40 years sober, 41, I was doing a lot of spiritual work. But what I thought, I was straight in here. What I didn't understand was the body learns how to feel. So here I am. I'm doing my spiritual work, but I don't feel better. I know now what I have to do. The body has to be taught as well to stop feeling bad. You know what I mean? You know, because if you think about it, I spent many a Sunday afternoon sitting alone, you know, sitting there, I haven't got children, I haven't got grandchildren, I'm alone, nobody thinks of me, etc. And I could analyze that and get through that, but my body still hurt. It doesn't now, because I've known what to do about it. So that has been a big piece, because when I went away at 21 years, I came back and I taught it to people. And I also learned to meditate. There's the key. Because when you learn to meditate, and people say it's so hard. No, it isn't. We've got a lot of foolish ideas. People think they're going to quiet their mind. You never will quiet your mind. That's not how meditation goes. And, you know, there are methods that you can use. And, you know, I'd give a retreat on that any day if anybody wanted to learn to meditate. And I've learned something else that I didn't know. And I've learned it, and I'm excited about it. And I learned this in the last 3 weeks. And that is the importance of our feelings. Because the subconscious, our feelings go into our unconscious, and the unconscious accepts those feelings and creates accordingly. Oh, so you're feeling bad. Okay, we'll create some more stuff for you. You know, I don't want to get in, I'm going to leave it at that. But for me, that's what 50 years of sobriety is about, because learning how I function has enabled me to change, because I'm not the only one who has sat there and prayed and said, God, change me. There's no God to change us, because God will change us, but it'll change me through when my thinking changes. And when my thinking changes and my feelings change, my behavior's got a chance of changing. And then life starts. That's how things have happened for me. I'm dedicated. I'm dedicated because I think everything I've learned. I don't go think a whole lot trying to figure out who God is. I look at the sky, and the sky is so immense and so beautiful and so such perfection. That to me is what this power, whatever it is. But I remember May the 20th, 1973. Grace, bang. And grace never makes a mistake. But you can't use it to get what you want. It happens. And when it happens to you, you use it. I'll tell you one more thing and then I'm going to sit down. I have made a big mistake when I had problems. I would pray or talk to God or try to fix it this way. I've got this problem, God, with this person, or I've got this problem with this situation, and help me and show me so I can fix this. Doesn't work. You know what has worked? Going directly to God. The problem is there because something is wrong inside me. And when I go directly to God, that's what I do now, and say, God, I don't know who you are, but I believe you are God. And I respect you, and I know you're here, and I'm going to operate from that perspective. And it's amazing how things work out. See, I don't think life, you know what the scientists are saying? They're saying they think that the spirit and the universe sees itself through us. But, you know, if I'm always thinking me, 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 and how I feel, and they're not doing it right, nah, 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 the universe can't see itself. But if I'm keeping my inside clear, God, you're here. That, as it says on page 55, you're here. We can work with that. Then we see the world different. So, yeah, you know, it's just wonderful. I know I've got paths ahead that are tough. There are lots of things I don't like, things I have to deal with. But I do know that this concept of God within really works. And with an open heart, I can tell you, I am so grateful to be here with every single one of you. And if there's anything I can do for you, all you have to do is ask. God bless you.